Hey, and welcome to episode number, I think, 7 at this point. It might be 8. I don't know. of Circuit Breaker Podcast. A podcast about knowing cool things that's going on in tech world and IoT, and especially talking to makers who've now made it into something bigger. Today is the CES hangover episode, and as you can hear the laughing in the background, I am just as hungover from CES as AK is, and I'm joined by AK from No Things. So who are you, and what are you up to?
Well, thanks, Adam. And as you just mentioned, I'm recovering from that same CES. But I'm also the founder and CEO of No Things, which is an IoT development tools company. I also, as you may hear for the makers, I get to be CTO of my wife's farm, Funkin' Fresh Farms. We do pretty high technology aquaponics, trying to basically, feed ourselves and do that efficiently through data and instrumentation rather than a lot of petrochemicals. And say midnight to 4 a.m. and on weekends, I still get to code once in a while.
Okay, so before we get to the farm, because I've seen lots of fun pictures from the farm. What is No Things exactly, for those who don't know? So, it's a machine learning platform, and then how did you come about with it? Like, what was the whole genesis of the whole thing?
All right, so actually the real first genesis was I was an architect for a product called Service Virtualization from CA Technologies, where we basically virtualize away back-end systems. So if you're working on one piece of code, you don't need all of the other connected cloud systems at that point in time, right, just as a developer. So I was working on an automation server for my old house, automating everything, from the lights to the locks to my garden. And when I was working on the code, so my dog is actually scared of when the lights turn on and off automatically.
As is everybody's.
It's really weird. So one night at about 4 a.m., I'm working on the code, and I accidentally trigger the panic function for the house, which starts flashing all the lights all over the house, like alarms going off. My wife is running at me, ready to kill me. My dog is tail between her legs under the table, and I'm like, maybe I shouldn't be working on a live system when I'm doing some of this stuff, especially at 4 a.m. So we had this product, Service Virtualization, that sort of lets you do that for servers, but nothing there for devices. So that kind of just made me go, wait, there's something really wrong here. I can't really get my work done, and this is all software. There's got to be a better way to do it. From there, then there was going on a cruise. I constantly am bringing all my stuff with me, because when I'm on vacation is when I get to do the coding I like. And security doesn't like it when you have a bunch of circuit boards, a bunch of wires, and other things. I always have that little card in my bag from the TSA. Hey, we opened it up and we wanted to check you out. And I know it's not because I have a big beard or anything else. It's because I have things that basically look like I'm building a bomb in my bag every time I travel.
Oh, man, traveling to CES for you must have been interesting. I know it was for me.
Yeah. Well, no, that's why it was mostly T-shirts.
They're like, oh, look, he's just marketing. He's safe.
Yeah.
I had all the prototypes on me. It was thoroughly entertaining. I'm so glad I had.
Dude, that's the first trip in a long time nobody opened my bag. I think it's because, like, on those flights, everybody was carrying something like that, right? It is CES, so.
So you go on this cruise, you start coding the stuff you like, and then you come up with this platform. But the other interesting thing is it's tied to some human genome project
okay,
or something.
Yeah. So let me tie it together with the rest of that story. So fast forward about a year, and now I'm the product owner and running the service virtualization business. And we had been working with the University of Swinburne out in Australia, where CA has a partnership where we fund their research. And so we developed this machine learning algorithm that can learn how machines talk to each other. So you don't need to have a specification or know what the actual communications are. It'll just figure it out for you. And we were originally using that for old school mainframe stuff, where like the guys who wrote it were gone. Nobody has any idea what's happening on the wire. But then what kind of happened was realizing, like, why couldn't I do it for all of the devices? And it's because in the IoT space, you don't have just HTTP. You have HTTP, you have MQTT, you have CoAP, you have 80 different protocols, and most of them are proprietary. So there's no way to code for that. If you don't know the protocol, your only choice is to use that machine learning. So kind of put two and two together. We were doing it for the mainframe. We had one or two customers, but it wasn't the most effective way of doing things. But then I was like, wait, for my IoT stuff, this would work great. So I talked to Steve Verstig, who is like our lead research scientist, who works with the university, as well as who's now my CTO, this woman, Menka Goyal, who is brilliant in pioneering some of this stuff. And I'm like, how would this work for the IoT space? And we all kind of got excited in the possibilities, because not only could we figure out what the machines were talking, we also realized we could learn what the data looks like. So if I wanted to, so we would know, hey, cars can go from 0 to 70. It takes about 4 or 5 seconds. It's never going to happen in one. But if you want to go from 70 to 0, that can happen in 1 second. And it learns all of these sort of properties, which are, hey, when I'm trying to test out, what are the thresholds for doing automation? This is exactly the kind of data I need. So from there, we put the idea together. I made a pitch to our board. CA has this internal startup funding mechanism. So a little over a year ago, we pitched it to them. They decided to fund me, and that's where No Things came from.
And you guys just hit a huge milestone that, right? So you have the first year safety net to say, okay, is this a viable product? And you guys just passed that.
Yep.
So what now? It's a bigger product, right? And a bigger platform?
Well, so right now, and I guess I can throw that out there for any embedded engineers or people in that space in the Dallas area, we are hiring pretty aggressively right now. But yeah, so that safety net is gone. I mean, I think, as you know, at CES, we were there for the launch. So we've been able to help a couple of customers get their products out to market with just our prototype. So now I'm heads down getting the real productized version built so that I can enable developers and not have it be so hacky. I want that within 5 minutes, I have a virtual device ready to go and I can do my code. And so for about the next month and a half, we're going to be heads down turning into commercial quality product code, the prototype we've been using up until now. And that's sort of where we're at. So yeah, we got that next round of funding growing the team. And I'm really looking forward to having the actual version of the product out.
That's awesome. Okay, so that's No Things. And then, again, for those who don't know, go to nothings.io, and I'll put that in the show notes, /EAP, right?
Yep.
For the getting early access to the platform. I know it's been super useful for one of the companies that I work with. So I try to stay away from that as much as possible on this podcast, but I'll put more links in the show notes and you guys can go find out more of what's going on there. We have some pretty cool press releases, I believe, that went out as well. So yeah, that's the fun side. Now for the fun side, I know I saw lots of pictures of goats and chickens hanging out together, and you've got this cool greenhouse with all sorts of control. So this goes back to you kind of going, okay, I'm going to sit at the kitchen table and hack on something. So what are you building there? What are the cool things that you're building on the farm and connected ag?
So I guess the main thing right now is the test greenhouse. And actually this year we're looking to expand to something 4 times the size of what we have for our sort of test bed and turn that into a nursery. But the current greenhouse is, we grow things with a method called aquaponics. And for people who are not familiar with what aquaponics is, it's you mix hydroponic growing with basically a fish farm. So you have in my case, I got a big tank for the fish. We're growing catfish because they're tasty. We feed the fish poop in the water. That creates the nutrients. And then there's basically natural bacteria and other things in the water break it down so the plants can absorb it. The plants clean up all the water, so the fish are happy. Like the plants absorb all those nutrients, which also purifies the water. You basically create this really cool little ecosystem.
Right.
And it requires like 1/3 of the water of conventional growing, which is weird because everything's in water, but no, you still actually are using less water because it's constantly being cycled. And since me and my wife were kind of hippie eaters, aquaponics keeps you real honest. If you put anything that's pretty much like toxic or any chemical fertilizers to help the plants, you'll kill your fish. If you're doing anything like that for the fish, you're probably going to kill your plants. So you're really kind of limited to creating a very healthy ecosystem and keeping all the plants going without adding petrochemicals or other things to the system. Now that leads into the part where it's IoT, because the optimization now, I can't just go, you know, dump a bunch of nitrogen on it or something to make everybody grow in like 10, you know, in 2 weeks and get huge weird vegetables. So what I wanted, what I'm doing is really taking a look at the data, like how much fish waste is in the water. I hate to say it, this translates into two chemicals, we call nitrites and nitrates, that are the basic nutrients. That feeds the plants. They go too high, it kills your fish. So you want to have an optimization of exactly how much that is there, or the pH level, because plants want to have a pH below 7. Fish want to be, actually, they're happier closer to 8. So you're trying to run a very thin line to maximize your output. So right now, this week, actually, I took time off of No Things, off of the real day job, so I can go finish the installs from some additional sensors for the greenhouse. For people who've been watching and listening to the news, we've had record hard cold snaps. So I had all these plans for, hey, here's the thermal mass in my greenhouse, this is how much cold I can, you know, the plants can take. It just blew all my calculations out of the water this past week.
Right, it dropped down to like, what, 16, 19, I think I saw on my truck. And for Texas, no one knows what to do when it gets that cold. Everybody's like, what just happened? Hell froze over. I don't understand.
And we had 8 degrees out at the farm one night, one morning. So that consistent cold has now made it so the greenhouse is too cold, and I'd been building a passive solar system to install. This week, I got to get it installed. I was like, oh, I always have time. It was for optimization before, and now it's for survival. But one of the things that we do in the greenhouse is, so I watch for the amount of ambient sunlight. We have a call that goes out to NOAA to figure out what is today's sunrise and sunset, and I watch the water temperature. So based upon those, I can now cycle the pump for the passive solar. So I'm only cycling water when there's actually enough sunlight to give me a net benefit. Right, and turn it off when it's not, so it's not cycling at night, you know, in some kind of stupid fashion. And then I have the other piece because, hey, there's always some time at 9 o'clock at night we're going to go hang out in the greenhouse, or, you know, something goes wrong, and I don't want the thing to suddenly turn on because we're out there with flashlights. So building in all the intelligence from those different sensors, basically to do passive solar, so for very little energy, I can heat up everything, keep the fish happy, keep the plants growing in winter. It's cool. Actually, the cilantro still survived, and so did our Swiss chard. Despite being frozen, it's still alive. So it's January in Texas, and I have fresh vegetables out in my greenhouse.
That's really amazing. Okay, so could you use this for the reverse, right? Because it gets beyond hot as well in Texas. So are you going to reverse it when it comes to summer and say, okay, at night, cycle the water so that it cools everything down?
So that's the plan with the second greenhouse that we build. The current one, I don't have, it's more of a temporary and smaller structure. And Texas has weird soil. So for the larger greenhouse, we're going to build geothermal underneath, which can be both warming or cooling depending on the time of year.
Right.
And basically apply that same idea. So we'll have a heat section and a cooling section. And it's really just kind of doubling up on the same idea that we did and just reverse it. Right. Instead, like when it's dark and it's hot, then let's go ahead and cycle everything. So that's entirely the plan as we continue to grow.
So then I'm curious, how does the scaling work? How does it, so if you double the size of your greenhouse, do you quadruple the size of your output for food, or what's the scale function there?
So a bigger part of the scale function is actually the amount of water that you have in your system. So there are two kind of confounding factors. One is square foot area, but you can kind of tweak with that. So I'm taking a lot of things from urban gardening, which, why I'm out in the country, but you know, you take the ideas of vertical gardening. So within that controlled greenhouse space, I can get more space for growing things that want to grow tall as well as flat. But the other big constraint is how much water you have for the amount of fish. Because that's where all of your nutrients come from. So as we grow the square foot area, the amount of water that we can store actually grows exponentially. So that stops becoming the factor in terms of space. It's sort of like, right, because volume increases on the cube versus the square for the square footage. So that'll make life a little bit easier. And once we start having a few thousand gallons underground, I've now got a lot of thermal mass and a lot of a bigger ecosystem. Because basically the plants and the fish are constantly trading back and forth for the amount of nutrients that are there in the water. One of them sees them as food, and the other, like, that's my poop, I want it gone.
Right.
But as we get to that bigger size, the scaling factor is sort of that square footage plus what I can do with vertical. And we've had, I think I showed you the one picture of the really bad strawberry tower I tried at first, which just was miserable. We got like 3 strawberries and the rest of them rotted. I mean, it just was a bad setup. But no. Now we know what we're doing. That's why we have a small greenhouse and we're building a large one, because I got to break it a couple of times before I get it right.
Right. That's brilliant. So, very cool.
Aspect. I mean, our goats are little. They're Nigerians. We love playing with them out in the field, but that is not a scalable business. So
right,
if you want to
right,
have a scaling
right, right.
factor on goats, that's a lot of people. The scaling factor for the farm is getting the space and building enough electronics to be smart about it.
Right? Okay, so where can people find out about more of this stuff, especially since you guys are scaling this, right?
Yeah, so there's funkinfreshfarms.com. There's also, I think, an Instagram. So my wife runs the business. I'm mostly the weekend CTO, and I can't do the social media stuff very well. But she posts on Instagram under the farm's name, Facebook, and we're about also launching an eating club, basically for people in the area to get the organic produce and other things, and that part's completely cool. So yeah, just go to funkinfreshfarms.com, and I'll make sure Liz goes ahead and has all the links for all the Instagram. I think she does. It's sad, right? The only CTO part I do for this gig is the greenhouse, and I leave a lot of that to her.
Right on. Okay, and then, you know, one of the other things, we were hanging out in the booth at CES, and part of it is we're laughing because every time, and again, thank you so much to Nerdvana for letting us record here. But one of the things that's always been in the background for the last couple of episodes is this lovely server cabinet that's here. And so we started talking a lot about audio as well. We met some really cool audio folks there as well. And so you've got some background in that, tinkering in the garage and kind of first stories of all sorts of fun, you know.
Yeah.
Microphone incidents. I think I have a couple to share as well, so I'm sure I want to hear yours first. What happened in the garage?
All right, so one, how I got into electronics was actually, I was trying to do a punk band thing since I was like 13, 14, and I couldn't afford effects, so I went to Radio Shack, learned how to build them. That's how I got into this, so, yeah, as we're looking at the mics and setting everything up, so I've been 15, and we're you know, it's the typical, like, you know, suburban angsty kids playing in their parents' garage, and I just bought two new mics, and we were trying to do, like, a quick demo tape and setting up the recording, so we close the garage door, trying to, you know, that's our sound baffling. Yay, yeah. We close the garage door. And I hung the two mics for the overheads from the rails on the garage door. So we're jamming out. We think we're all badass. And his mom comes home and opens up the garage door. I happen to see this for about half a second, and I am like, oh my God, what do I do? Trying to chase there before the garage door comes, cuts both mic cables, right? And these are phantom-powered mics, so there's sparks flying for a second as both of them are cut off. I dash to try to catch one of the mics before it hits the ground, because these are sensitive microphones that are about 10 feet in the air, or maybe 8 feet in the air, and boom, they just come crashing down, ruin both mics. His mom is yelling at us, like, what the hell are you doing in my parking spot? And we have sparking cables and a mixing board throwing sounds and everything left and right. It was just a nightmare.
Oh my gosh, that sounds so familiar. So I'm in high school. And same thing, you know, high school theater, start getting into audio, and that's how I got into all this electronics and technology and everything else. And there's a scene on the play where we have a bunch of overhead mics as well, but they're designed to be there, supposedly. At least the stage was set up for overhead mics to capture everything that's going on. And one of the characters is supposed to crack a whip. Well, the character pulls up the whip, it wraps around the mic, and then pull down on it. They didn't realize they were pulling down with it. So I see this happening. I hit mute on the soundboard, and I just see it just pop, like, just fly on the board. I hear, you know, what's on monitor, not necessarily what's going out live, and I just hear it just completely crumble all over the place.
No.
Lost the channel, lost, like, a lot of infrastructure that day, but we also learned our lesson. Be careful where you hang mics when, you know, you do dress rehearsal and things, but yeah, so very similar experience. Just saw lots of sparks fly, and everybody was like, oh, that's a cool effect. I'm like, yes, that will never happen again. But yeah, so, you know, what else have you got going on? I mean, you know, there's lots of cool things. We talked about no things. We talked about your farm. Audio, I mean, we are always willing to talk about 1,000 audio stories. Every audio guy, by the way, has I don't know how many stories.
I got another audio story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's go.
So for people who used to like Pantera and know who Dimebag Darrell was.
A great local legend to Dallas, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is pretty local. So he was, you know, unfortunately, before he passed, he was doing this band called Damage Plan.
Yeah.
And I
good
was working,
band, too.
Yeah, dude. So I was working with a buddy of mine and we're trying to do this pilot for Fuse, which was a, yes, this is actually the premise, it was a heavy metal cooking show. All right.
It's not the first time I've seen that, and I promise you probably Food Network has tried at least five times.
Fuse then came up out with a short-lived one, I think about a year after we had done this whole little gig, right? So, I mean, the idea was my friend of mine, Scott Shivak, train chef and road manager. So basically it's like, hey, we hang out with the band backstage. He would cook something, try to teach the drunk metal people how to actually cook what we're doing.
Oh, Lord.
And, you know, just kind of hang out. So the second pilot we were doing was with Damage Plan. And Dimebag was drunk as hell. We had the rest of the band there. But obviously, he's the dude we want to get mic'd up, right? I mean, I'm going like, oh, my God, this is freaking Dimebag from Pantera. This is awesome. He is so lit. And I'm acting as sound guy. So I'm going to get the lav mic up because of how everything is. He just refused to, would not run it up his own pants for him. Right, like he's too drunk to figure out how to attach this mic, and I like to try to run them up there. So I got the mic. I'm like, dude, I've got to get you mic'd up. And he's just like, all right, little brown man, on your knees. You know, because I'm here trying to run it up his shirt. Like, I might be insulted, except no, this is Dimebag. This is awesome. So
that's flipping hilarious. I've had to do, yeah, there was another time where I was getting ready for a show as well. And, the actress, she was wearing for that particular scene, she's wearing a very low cut blouse.
Okay, yep.
And I had to mic her up really quickly. So she's like, well, where are you going to put the mic? And I'm like, okay. This is odd and uncomfortable. So this has happened 1,000 times, and I know there's a giant movement, but honestly, when you're being as professional as you can be, just incidental of work, right? Just yep. Like you having to run up somebody's pant leg, same thing. I'm having to mic her up. So I'm micing her up, and our director of photography walks in, and also a woman, and she's like, oh my God. I'm like, oh crap. Now what? And so at that point, our actress, she comes in and she's like, she starts laughing. She's like, no, I forced him to do this and everything else. So it was a good situation, but very funny situation. So yeah, I've been there, right, with you, where you're trying to mic somebody up and you're like, okay, this cannot get any worse. And you're just like, please, nobody took pictures, walked in, something, and hoping that, you know, it all turns out the way it turns out. But yeah,
no, I wish I had pictures of that. I'm not proud.
Fair enough. I think that's, I mean, I know we can go on for stories for hours, but I think that's all I've got. I know we've both been, you know, we're so hungover from CES and so tired. This is the first day in a long time. I mean, we generally record on Saturdays, and this is the first day in a long time that we've gotten chances to, like, slow down, sit down. I see Kate in the background, our community manager from Know Things as well, and she's, as cheery as she is, she's also kind of wearing down as well, I'm sure. So
silently sitting on the floor.
Exactly. So I'm going to let everybody enjoy the rest of their day. And this is going to be a shorter episode than usual, but that's because we're all super hungover. And we will see you next week.